You're listening to Around Comics, episode 282 for July of 2011. Here. This is Around Comics, the comic culture podcast, and on this July 2011 edition, I'm joined by my partner in crime, Mr. Brian Salazar, of course, along with Christopher Stark and Patrick Brower, who is one of the owner-operators of Challengers Comics and Conversation. And we chit-chat through a very quiet night at Challengers. Say, why quiet? Well, because everyone was in San Diego for Comic-Con International, which we will talk a little bit about that and other comic happenings in the world from the last month. So just sit back, relax, and enjoy another episode of Around Comics. We'll be back in August.
Jesus.
So angry.
We're recording, so
all right.
Go ahead and talk.
So
we should be recording this.
We should be, yeah, we should.
I've said that last,
a dozen times.
The last four comic book fans left in Chicago.
The last four not in San Diego.
Yeah, everyone else is in San Diego, which I guess we can start with some of that stuff. Do we care about the announcements? Are we dialed in?
We're definitely dialed in. I don't know how excited we are for each and every announcement, but
I go back and forth between wanting to know stuff that's going on and then going, oh, well, that's just, I don't want to, don't quit talking about San Diego because I just don't want to hear
because
about
we're not
it.
There.
Because I'm not there, yeah.
But we don't want to be there for the announcements. We want to be there for the social aspect of seeing all of our friends. I mean,
so I just want to be teleported there in the day and then teleported home at night. For like 2 or 3 days.
I want to do the opposite. I just want to be there for the night.
Just for the night?
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind walking around once, like, for, you know, see
but
it,
I mean, but you're old enough and do enough shows that you're not that excited on the show floor, and you're tired, and you get pushed
shows
around.
Shows here, I mean, I, you know, go to C2E2, Wizard World, or, you know, and it's just like 40 minutes into walking around. I'm like, okay, I can wait for,
After two days, I'm getting to the point.
Every comic show I go to, I will call Dal back here in Chicago and say, hey, what's the big news from this show that I'm at?
Yeah, right, you don't know
because
anything.
He follows it, he pays attention. And
we probably know more about the announcements being here.
Than the people
and,
there.
Yeah, you know, I agree.
Not just because we're in Chicago, because we're away from the convention floor.
I saw a funny tweet, Steve Bryan, he's like, oh, damn, I missed Mike Norton and someone else when they came by the table. And I was thinking, yeah, because you probably are not going to see them again. You know what I mean? They're probably not making their way back.
That was your chance. That's the one
thing I do miss, though. The thing that I'm most disappointed about not being at for San Diego is the Trickster exhibit that they have in this, wine store across the street from the convention center where they've had all these independent creator-owned creators setting up shop and doing running a mini-con. And that's the kind of additional programming that really makes the San Diego experience
It's the extra scene for the show.
Yeah.
Supplemental.
And supplemental program. That's excellent. That's a phrase. And that's something that's I'm disappointed I'm not at.
Yeah, I would much rather be at the Trickster thing.
First, you can drink wine all day. Secondly, they use all the wine cases as their tables and their shelves and displays. Right.
That's pretty sweet.
Well, I mean, this thing, it is the only convention, and New York is probably getting closer to this, but it's the only convention that happens in this country where everyone
I just want to reiterate my fuck New York and everything about it stance after
we had a pizza incident earlier tonight. Yeah, there was we trusted Patrick to order the pizza for the evening, and I really enjoyed saying I came in, I went into
the idea of you ordering pizza going, okay, well, you know Patrick's been here his whole life, he knows what good pizza is,
he knows pizza.
That's right,
no
he
question
does.
And then we get this sloppy, floppy, thin ass.
Okay, I grant you it was floppier than it should have been. Story of my life. But I'm not the one that said get mushrooms and garlic and sausage.
Well,
no, I don't
that
care.
You
I'm just,
usually
I'm just
can
excuses.
Get stuff. Yeah. Like, if you get stuff on pizza, it's usually okay. If you get
what
a regular
about,
pizza.
All right, hold on.
Not
you,
kids' pizza.
Your problem is in the delivery with the way in which the pizza is presented to you. What if it was cut into squares?
I don't think it would be. It's still too thin. It's just that floppy ass thing.
Honestly, it was the thinnest it's ever been. But I love Santulo's. Josh right. Emmons
it
started bringing
good.
That
it
to
tasted
us.
It tasted pretty good. I mean, it did taste
free
good,
comic but. Book day like 3 years ago. Now it's tradition. And
I would never order it.
We can't.
Oh, I
guess,
so I got him to blame, Emmons?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
hey,
I'm going to kick his ball ass.
Congratulations to our four-star buddy.
Josh and Pamela have a brand new addition to the family.
Well, baby.
Walker Houghton Emmons.
Walker Houghton Emmons.
Yep.
Sounds like a cowboy or something.
I can't help but think of a TV
Elmore
show.
That's an Elmore name right there.
Yeah.
Walker Houghton.
Walker Houghton, Texas Ranger.
Walker Emmons.
Walker Emmons.
Lawman.
It's like a sheriff's name, something like that.
That's a strong name. That's a strong
deputy.
Man.
Deputy Walker Emmons.
But he'd always bring it to us on Free Comic Book Day, and it became tradition.
The
and,
baby?
Yes.
Oh.
He had three babies. No, the pizza.
He had a baby every
and
year.
They don't deliver until after 5, so normally we have lunch earlier, so I can never usually get it. So today I waited and said, I'm going to buy these guys pizza.
And
I guess I shouldn't complain. You did buy pizza, so okay, I apologize.
No, it's okay that you don't like it, but Jesus, the way he's been glaring at me all night, just going, New York.
New York.
Well,
New York New City. York. I'm like one of those guys.
New
I'm
York
like,
City.
Yeah.
Can't you
no, no I don't talk like that. What the hell are you doing?
It's true that we have
So back to San Diego. Some of the announcements I've been excited about, but it's almost bordering on too much of a good thing now. The Dave Stevens collect artist edition.
The artist edition for IDW.
Came out.
IDW had a bunch of announcements today,
and now it's you know they've announced four. Artist editions.
Well, I think they've found that to be a very nice little niche for them. That you know, it's like they're getting the other publishers to allow that. You know, it's like, hey, go ahead.
It's
publish
pretty
the
great
Thor.
That they could do the Thor Walt Simonson edition. And I honestly got jealous. I'm like, I want the special San Diego cover. I don't care about the special San Diego cover. I don't care about the insides.
Yeah,
I kind of want to order the Thor one now that they're doing more and more. It's like, well, I just kind of want to get them all because.
But man, to introduce like to announce what. Four
they
extra at this show?
The Wallywood EC.
Wallywood EC. John Romita.
Senior.
Spider-Man. Amazing Spider-Man. The Will Eisner Spirit.
And they've got one more to come.
And one more to announce.
Yeah. On top of the... And the
I hope it's Frank Miller, Dark Knight. That'd
all
be
right.
pretty awesome.
See, posed this question before.
Yeah, this was,
Chris took a long time with his.
I was just thinking about it now. I'm like, oh, that'd be, I wouldn't mind a Frank Miller. But
Frank
I'm a huge
Miller,
Frank
Knight,
Miller.
Or,
I'm a huge Frank Miller.
Frank Miller, Daredevil would be great.
Yeah, but come on, it's Dark Knight. I mean, if you're going to do Frank Miller, do the Dark Knight.
I had thrown out Neil Adams.
After long deliberation.
Batman.
Yeah, Neil Adams, Batman.
Yeah, I'm,
I wanted Byrne Austin X-Men.
Good luck.
Yeah,
does that even exist? Do they,
well, those, that's those pages.
Just, these are wish lists. You know, it's going to be hard to gather some of that. But Chris,
what
did
about,
you have a?
I would say like a George Perez Avengers would be nice.
That'd be good.
I think they do.
That'd be good.
I think they would do new Teen Titans.
Perez blown up
probably
would be pretty cool. Perez, you know,
Perez blown up would probably be better than Perez at
comic
book
size. Yeah. What about more ancillary, you know, artists like not necessarily big name?
Chris, you talked about Ditko, but you don't want to do, and not that he's ancillary by any means, but they just announced a Spider-Man. What are the chances?
So I would love to see a Ditko Amazing Spider-Man, but they're doing the Romita. But you had mentioned some sort of Mobius,
yeah, something Mobius
would be.
I would say like a Frazetta, but he hasn't done enough comic book work, I think, to fill. You know,
I mean
there's no.
Well, there's one. It would be the Jack Kirby and Wally Wood. What was the project that they did together?
I don't even know.
Steve Bryant's gonna shoot me for not knowing this.
Jack Kirby and Wally Wood. They did. I don't even know what that would be.
Challengers, but. I'll come back to it.
You got Patrick. A bunch of guys that are probably yelling at us.
Yeah, they're
thanks.
Screaming.
Good job.
They're
good
screaming
job.
At us. But Wally Wood inked
Jack
Kirby.
Oh, yeah. What the hell was that?
A really short amount of time. But, you know, that's the thing. Hey, everyone talks about Kirby, but there's so much of the Kirby collector stuff out there that, that has a lot of his original pencils. And
yeah, but it's not blown up like that. It's
the Kirby,
you know,
collector's pretty good size. Those, but it's not on that, you know, the archival paper and
all
that.
How about Steve Rude Nexus?
Steve Rude Nexus would be very sweet.
That would be, I mean, that's an artist that I would like
you
to
know,
see.
You know, they're doing stuff that is definitely going to appeal to the collector. I mean, you know, Eisner is obviously a name, you know, Romita and Simonson. So, you know, I don't think that Steve Rude has the following that he should.
You know, well, I mean, maybe for Rocketeer, Dave Stevens, you think that has a huge following?
Well, I mean, a movie.
But... You know, maybe the Betty Page stuff.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of Rocketeer fans out there. You know, and
I don't think they're looking at, like, I mean, how many of these things are they even publishing?
Small
quantities, so I don't know that they're that worried about. You know, is this going to appeal to enough people? They're not trying to sell 10, 15, 20,000 of them, are they?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what their print runs are, but well, I can't imagine they're that big.
The other thing is that all the stuff is made from scans of the original art, and it's full color scans. So
hard to get a hold of.
So it's stuff. Yeah, exactly, and that's the problem. It's like you would, you know, obviously DC would, you know, jump the chance to do yet another Watchmen version, and so a Dave Gibbons version.
I'd like to see like something else. You know, but the Dark Knight would be cool.
A lot of that art's been sold. You know, what was that?
Yeah. Well, but you know, it's not the first time publishers have reached out to collectors and say, hey, can we get your stuff to scan it in? I mean, and I think a lot of times collectors are very much willing to do that because they appreciate that stuff. And you know, I don't know. I mean, I think...
I know there's been
projects, and I'm just trying to remember what one it was. I remember, there's been a few projects where...
Patrick had mentioned one where he had some original issues that... that a company had reached out to fans, and he sent in issues for a trade paperback that had been. You know,
yeah, I mean, I know that stuff has happened a lot, you know, in the past. So
they ever do the artist edition of Alien Legion? I got issue 2, page 6.
You are so strange.
I love that book.
I'm trying to think of what would be cool, like something that's like. Self-contained, small, you know, like a small...
Just like a full story?
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like something that, like I said, like Dark Knight, that's something that's just that, you know, four issues that you could do the whole thing.
Like a year one.
Mazzucchelli's year one. I don't know. I hope they keep doing them because they're pretty cool.
Yeah, once you start putting lists together, it's like...
I'll tell you what, I have the Dave Stevens one, and it's pretty amazing.
I'm very jealous.
It's about as close as I think you can get to owning that, you know, all the original stuff, because it's beautiful. It's
well,
amazing.
You know, I'm an original art nerd, so we're actually sitting right below my Stuart Immonen Fear Itself page.
Full of dragons.
Yeah, we're recording once again in the Rogues Gallery at Challengers Comics, and sitting amongst the gallery showing for Stuart Immonen.
Immonen?
Immonen.
It's an I.
Yeah, so we've got some
fucking Canadians.
Some awesome next wave art and some Action Comics and a lot of Fear Itself and Ultimate.
He's
Fantastic
pretty good.
Four. He's all right.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
The guy morphs styles probably as well as anyone I've seen. He just is able to switch off from, you know, so many different styles to fit whatever he's working on.
And you can see him progress throughout the years too, between his Action Comics stuff on the side here and Fear Itself that just came out. It's a new, like, it fits into the genre that it came from.
Yeah, and a super nice guy. Super nice guy.
Absolutely.
Hey, you put something together here recently in Chicago that I hope other people in other cities are able to do. You put together a one-day comic book swap at a local watering hole. Tell us a little bit about the comic swap.
About a month ago, we put on exactly what it says, a comic swap. People were able to bring issues, trades, anything comic-related. They've read, they've enjoyed, they want to pass along to other people that would enjoy it also.
They've read, they didn't enjoy, they want to get rid of.
That too as well.
I didn't even know about it. I wish I would have known.
You would have brought in a truckload.
Oh, I got so much crap.
We're going to do another one. So
I got so much stuff I just want to get rid of. I have a garage full of, I have like 15 long boxes in my garage that I'm just I'm thinking about just burning it as fuel.
Doing a Ryan Outlay.
I'm ready to. I mean, I have no interest in them any longer. I don't want to. What am I going to do with all these comic books? My kids aren't going to want them. They're not worth anything.
Well, that was part of the thing, too, is that comics, unfortunately, aren't worth anything anymore. So you can't turn around and sell them. So they're just stockpiling in people's houses.
Yeah.
And it was, well, you know, I want to read stuff I particularly don't want to necessarily buy, but I would like to try out. Like, I picked up this the first two trades of Scalp there. Never read it. I was always heard great things. So, hey, managed to pick that up. But I had a couple of local Chicago creators came by. Chris Burnham, Chris Mitten.
Paul Mounds.
And we're going to do another one in probably September, and all three of them said, hey, invite us back. We're going to, you know, we'd love to do it again.
That's cool.
Yeah. But, yeah.
It was a good excuse.
Where was it at?
It was at the Wizard Lounge?
Lizard's Liquid Lounge over on Irving Park.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So it was about four blocks from my house. So it was an excuse for me to take a box of comic books and go in there and have, you know, have good a beer selection, have a few beers.
Yeah, a friend of mine is one of the bartenders there. We talked to the owner because they do other swaps like clothing and just general book swaps. We're like, well, can we do this Sunday when he's working? And she said, yeah, and it had a pretty positive turnout. So she looked at it and said, hey, you guys did a great job, and I'd love to do another one.
The only problem is that I left the house with express instructions.
To not bring anything back?
Do not bring anything back.
Yeah, that's my problem. I mean, even like tonight, like I came here, and I haven't been here in more than a month. And it's like, you know, I picked up four or five different books, you know, hardcover stuff, and it's like, it's just going to go in a stack.
Go on your pile.
Yep. Yeah, it's just like, and I've been trying to get through some stuff, but it's just.
It's summer. It's hard. Yeah,
I think it's just, you know, I just think I'm at a point in my life where it's just like, yeah, it's just not a priority. I can't, you know what I mean? Like, I just don't have the time to read that many books.
Honestly,
and as much as I want to, and now I'm looking at, well, maybe I'll read that when I retire. Maybe, you know, it's like, maybe when I retire.
On a beach,
somewhere,
with an umbrella.
You know, hopefully. But I think I've said this before. I honestly feel like I probably have more comic books in hardcovers now than I will than I'm ever going to be able to read in my lifetime. Because I'm 40 now. If I'm lucky, maybe I get another 40 years, if I'm lucky. I mean, that's pushing. I doubt I'll make it to 80. hopefully, but you never know. You know,
you're working out hard.
Yeah.
You quit smoking. But, yeah. You're doing well.
But and I'm like, I don't know that I can get through all this in 40 years, even if I tried.
It used to be I would go home and I would read in between 4 and 8 comics a night, whether it's a single issues or in collections. And, you know, honestly, in the last week or so, I picked out one hardcover to read, and I read like 2, maybe 3 issues a night of it, and just kind of paced myself and enjoyed the story. And what was
recently that I was really glad that I did do it because it was really good when I went back and read it. Was the Scott Snyder run on Detective Comics.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I had been reading that, but I've been kind of brushing through it. And then, like, and, like, the last 3 issues, I don't even think I read them yet. And so I had them, and I'm just like, well, I'm going to go back and read these. And so I just started from, it was, like, whatever, 781 or whatever, 881, whatever issue he started with, and went and read them, you know, read all, whatever, 9, I think there's 9 issues out. It's 3 story arcs. And just loved it, and just you know, I was really, really glad that I went back and read that, and just took my time and enjoyed it, and because it's fantastic, and it just reminded me of how much I like to read big chunks of story, because that one especially, he does such a nice job of having a couple of different storylines going, and. You know, the one storyline about Jim Gordon and his son.
The one that was drawn by Frank Avella.
Yeah, it's weaved through the Jacques storyline, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, too. And it's through,
it builds,
like,
up to it. It builds,
yeah,
up,
I mean, that's
it.
Been going, yeah, on over 9 issues. And there's, like, you know, it started off as, like, in the first 3-issue arc, you had Jacques doing the main story with Batman, Dick as Batman, and the main storyline there for 3 issues. And then there was a backup story with Frank Avella, mm-hmm, with Jim Gordon.
And then DC went to the $299 price point and stopped doing the backups. And so then this is what happened, is that they stopped doing the backups, and instead of doing those as the 8-page backups, they ran that as three issues.
They did three issues of the Frank Avila stuff.
Yeah, that's why it was kind of that weird. It worked that way.
But then when it came back to the Jacques came back on art for the third arc. The stuff that had happened, Jim was still dealing with this stuff.
Yeah, it mattered to the story.
Yeah, but reading it all in one big chunk really, you know,
it worked.
Yeah, it really worked, and it really made the story that much more enjoyable.
It was actually kind of a happy accident in how those backups.
Well, it would have worked really nice as if it was just backups and then like flip the. That's what I thought they were going to do. Is like. You know, do the first arc where the Frank Avila stuff was a backup, and then do the next three where the Jacques stuff was a backup, and then flip back and forth. But I actually like the idea of them just, you know, have two storylines going and have an artist do three issues and then have another artist do the next three issues of a different storyline that's sort of still weaved in, and then go back, you know, so you don't have an artist that is late because he can't, you know, get...
You've got three months.
Yeah, you know, you got three
page stories.
And not even backups. Just do the full issue, but do it in three different, you know, three arcs, three arc chunks for each artist,
That's kind of what they're doing with the Batwoman when it gets going. Is that
you and Batwoman?
Oh, come on,
Chris says to me, cut me
some slack.
I can't.
It's not in your nature.
No.
But J.H. Williams will do a few issues, and then Amy Reeder will do a few issues, and the idea is that they'll kind of ping pong back and forth.
But I think as long as you know, I like the idea of trying to. You know, write two different storylines that sort of weave in and out, and you know, and just keep that going. If you have a writer that can do it, I think it works really well. Because then it's like, you know, because that's the thing, sort of like, you read three issues with one artist, and then all of a sudden it's a different artist, even if they're kind of similar. If it's the same story, it kind of breaks it for you. You know what I mean?
Well,
like, but if you change the story where it's like, now you're, you know, like with this one, it was like, the three issues was Batman, the next three issues was Jim, but both of those stories were in the background of each other.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, so it worked really well if you could kind of do that sort of thing. And it's just some planning, really. It's just sort of, you know, by the writer. And
well, there's another book that I know that you wanted to talk about that is kind of going to be playing around with that, with artists of, you know, similar but different styles and weaving some stories in. And that is Marvel's new relaunch of Daredevil.
Daredevil number one with Paolo Rivera
and Marcos Martin.
Mark Waid writing it. Yeah, no, I absolutely loved it. I've been a Daredevil fan all my life, you know, since I started reading comics. And as much as I've loved all the dark, grim, and gritty stuff since Frank Miller wrote, you know, those stories back in the day.
Everyone's trying to be Frank Miller.
That character has lent itself to a very gritty crime, you know, street level sort of stuff for a long time. And it's always been sort of like, how much can we pile on to Matt Murdock and then make him break and then, you know, make him come back kind of thing. And that's sort of been the formula for him. And I've enjoyed it. I'm not taking anything away from it. But when I started reading Daredevil, that's not what it was. It was a different kind of character. He wasn't quite Spider-Man. He was different, you know. But he was much more friendly, much more a much lighter, funner character than he became. So tortured, you know, over the years. At some point,
he was an older Peter Parker. He kind of gone around the block a couple times and dealt with some stuff that Peter didn't have to. But those characters were always very similar, and Matt Murdock was kind of the older, wiser version of Peter Parker's. How I always looked at that character.
I didn't ever see Matt as Peter so much because I thought Matt was way cooler than Peter ever was.
Okay.
That was maybe just me. But I know what you mean. But
he was kind of like Peter's older brother in a lot of ways. I guess is how I felt about it. You know,
but he just got to the point where it was just so much between Frank Miller and the guys after him, and then Bendis, and you know, it's just like
Oh, everybody's been trying to do Born Again since it came out.
So Wade, I give him tons of credit because you're reading that first issue. It seemed to me like he really thought about what he wanted. Not only what he wanted to do with Matt, which was obviously get away from that and make it a bit friendlier and make it a more accessible book and just get away from torturing Matt Murdock so much.
You know the thing I noticed the most out of this issue, more than anything, and it was I think it was very, very conscious to kind of reset the tone. When did 95% of the story take place?
When did it take place? During the day.
During the day. Yeah. It was all of the scenes.
No, absolutely. I mean, very, very obvious that that he was changing things, that he was
bringing Daredevil into the daylight.
But what I thought was most impressive was that he thought about the character and what had gone on previously. And he didn't just went, okay, well, we're just going to wipe all that away. He didn't do that. He thought about, okay, this character has been through the ringer over and over again. What would that do to someone mentally, and how do you bring them back from that? And it was actually in the back of the book, Wade has a little thing that he talks about some of his ideas, and it was, you know, Matt's been through so much, he literally is now the man without fear because he has nothing else to lose. He's gone to the worst places that mentally, and physically that he possibly could. Yeah. He has nothing to fear anymore, and now he's living his life so carefree. Because it's just day-to-day, moment-to-moment, and nothing, you know what I mean? There's nothing to fear. He is now the man without fear. And I thought that was brilliant. I thought that the way he wrote the character and the story, you know, the story of Matt being, he's back in New York, he's trying to get his life together. But he didn't just wipe everything away and start over. I mean, it's very much leading off of where he was at. He's a new character now. He's a new person.
People are literally joking with him.
Yeah,
like, come on,
it's
you're
just
Daredevil.
Like, no, I'm not Daredevil. Over and over again, nope, I'm not Daredevil. I'm not Daredevil. It really did remind me why I fell in love with the character. And not because he was tortured and dark and gritty, but because he was cool. Mm-hmm. He was the coolest blind dude you could ever meet. And he was a cool superhero to me. It was just, I always loved Daredevil because
he has this confidence where he looks at everyone and the joke is on them.
Yeah,
you know, he is the guy that's holding all the cards again.
The scene that really just I loved was in the beginning. He is sort of stalking a wedding of a mob princess, basically. Because he heard that someone may be trying to kill the bride.
Yeah.
At the wedding. And he ends up getting in a fight with this assassin. There's a character called the Spot.
I love the Spot.
But in the middle of this fight, he takes the opportunity to grab the bride and just lay one on her. And it was like, wow, that was... Yeah. And once again, it was like... No fear. He had, you know what I mean? Like, that's a guy living just completely spontaneously and not worrying about anything. And that's the difference. Matt had spent the last, you know, since, you know, Born Again, thinking so much about everything, worrying so much and
trying to keep it all together.
And now he's just like, fuck it. You know what I mean? He's just like, he has no fear any longer. And it just when I saw that, I was like, "Wow, that reminded me of Gene Colan and that era of Daredevil that I've loved." And
it was,
I'm just waiting for Gladiator to come back,
one of my favorite scenes in New Frontier, which I know is one of your favorite books, where Flash is fighting Captain Cold. And he's zooming around around this casino in Las Vegas, and he stops and, like, you know, mid scene to weigh a kiss on
his girlfriend
Iris. Yeah, he stops to lay a kiss on Iris, and it's just like this very sweet moment, and that's what this was with Daredevil. He's the coolest guy in the room. And he knows it.
What I always felt like with Daredevil, and like I said, that's why I fell in love with that character originally, was was back before the Frank Miller stuff, and when he was, and not, like I said, I'm certainly not taking anything. I love the Frank Miller stuff. I loved Bendis'
run on. Some of the greatest
comics ever. Yeah, but I loved that character before that, and he was that cool dude that he was. Yeah, I mean he had that confidence about him. He had something, you know. He was the man without fear. I mean, and that's why I like that character so much more than, a Spider-Man.
A lot of people call him Marvel's Batman, but in a lot of ways, he is Marvel's Hal Jordan. And, and they're both the men without fear. There's a lot of Hal Jordan in Matt Murdock.
Except he doesn't have a power ring that he can create anything with his mind.
Well, yeah, but there was it may have been written by Mark Waid. It was the Brave and the Bold, Batman and Green Lantern, where they're in Las Vegas, and Hal is hitting on 17 because...
No, that was because wasn't that Jay Bone and
no, that was Wade and Perez.
It was the relaunch, right?
Yeah,
yeah, the first issue.
It was Wade and Perez, and I think that attitude that Hal Jordan, of course, he would hit on 17 because he's
carefree
Hal Jordan.
And
so I think there's a lot of similarities in those characters. They're both Wade's men, and they're both the men without fear. So I loved it. And Paolo Rivera's art, he's so good.
It was great.
The radar sequences.
Honestly, I can't say that I was always the biggest fan of his painted stuff.
Mm-hmm, the mythos stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I liked it. I just wasn't crazy about it. But this was fantastic. And, the stuff he did, I especially loved the stuff he did, looking through Matt's radar sense, and especially with the spot.
With the spot, seeing the dead spot.
Yeah, and that was another thing that I thought Wade did really well, is that he reminded us that Matt is blind, and that even though he has these amazing senses, that sometimes, it can still play tricks on him, and sometimes it's difficult, and there's things that he can't get around. Like, there was a mention at one point of, he can't read the meter on a cab.
Yeah,
there's just no way for him to do that.
That was great double page spread.
That was Marcos. He's like that, and all of a sudden that's becoming his signature.
No, that was Paolo. That was the Marcos.
That was Marcos Martin backup.
You're right. He did that with Spider-Man.
He did that with the Spider-Man, and but just that kind of stuff. There was a point where Matt went to pay someone with a $20. He thought it was a 20, but it was actually a 5. But then I wasn't quite sure if he did that on purpose
He can feel the ink.
Well, but even it's like he's not perfect.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like it's not a perfect thing.
I still think that was totally him. Covering.
Either way, but my point is that we Matt got to the point where his blindness didn't count anymore.
Yeah,
because people didn't write it. It was just like, oh, it was his radar sense. He was blind. It never mattered because he never made mistakes. And in this, it was like constant reminders of he's limited. There, even though he's amazing and can do all these amazing things, there's things that limit him. There's a part where radar chafe, someone shot at him, and all
Which
of a sudden
awesome.
You see, yeah, awesome yeah. scene, and he couldn't tell what the world was any longer, and just stuff
it's
like that.
They know who I am. And
it's just like that kind of. Reminders of this guy is blind, and he deals with that on a daily basis. Every moment of every day.
Well, that's what at his core, that's what made him a Marvel superhero.
Yeah, he had faults. He had that fault, and I think that over the years, it just got to the point where it was that he just happened to be blind, but he was it was more about him being a superhero than him being a blind superhero. And the only time it ever came up was when he was Matt, and not when he was Daredevil. And I just think the stories changed so much to where they just weren't about him as a person any longer. You know what I mean? He was a tool to he was a totem, mm-hmm. It was everything I could have possibly asked for more. I wasn't expecting it at all.
It's amazing in comics that, you can take a character to a point that they're exhausted and there's nowhere to go. But you can always go home
and go back again. And they really did. I mean, you know, like I said, I've been a Daredevil fan since I started reading comics, and I was reading Daredevil before the Frank Miller stuff. And believe me, Mark Waid knows what he was doing. And
this is brand new day for Daredevil.
Yeah,
is how I feel about it.
You have to compare everything to something.
It's in that respect. That it's like, you know, it really felt like they had pushed Spider-Man to a point. It's like, okay, where are we going to go now? Let's go back to the beginning. Let's go back.
Yeah, but the thing that's better about it is that this was not done by by the devil making everyone forget who Spider-Man was. This was going, well, what would be an actual evolution for this character from where he was to where I want him to be? How do, you know, what makes sense, and how do we tell that story? And that's why it's so good. That's why, to me, that's why I think Waid just did an amazing job with this, is because he didn't just go, that's all done. That doesn't count anymore. No, this is why you are the person now because of everything that happened in the past. You're a completely different person. This is, you know, this is an evolution of a character. You're a completely different person because of everything that you went through.
Sure, we're in brand new day. It was like, oh, that's the,
we're going to wipe it away. Yeah, we're just going to wipe it away. Yeah.
And Waid said, no, he is. You're absolutely right. He is the man without fear because he has gone through this.
Because
he's
gone through
it. It's very smart.
I thought I just, and that's why I was so impressed with
Waid's really good.
Yeah, you know what? I gotta say that I have never really been that big. I mean, not that I disliked his stuff, but he was always one of those creators that was just sort of there for me.
He's for a baseball analogy, he's a 300 hitter with not much power.
Yeah.
So you never notice him, but he's so consistently good.
But this was remarkable. I thought it was just a fantastic first issue. And not only just good for like someone like me, but I thought, you know, as an entry, you know, someone that maybe has never read the character before, it was a very accessible, very reader friendly, and
the easy. Spot is cool.
The spot is awesome, and that's cool. That's like a classic, you know, a Daredevil sort of foe. It's like a weird, not right, you know, like not really necessarily dangerous, certainly, but not in the classic sense of like a, you know,
he's a street level villain.
Yeah, he's
more than
weird, but it's just like strange, and that's the kind of stuff.
He's kind of a one trick pony. But
the old Daredevil's characters are, I mean, it's like Stiltman or, you know, Gladiator, who's my favorite, you know, and that kind of, those kind of characters, Mysterio, and, you know, it's like they weren't super dangerous characters. They were just weird and odd, but they gave a blind guy,
a really hard time.
Yeah, you know, and that was the cool thing about it. So I'm looking forward to a lot more of it, and I hope they continue down this track. And like you said, it's going to be Rivera and Marcos Martin. Marcos Martin's, you know, one of my favorites now, and I know yours too,
and a lot of people's, I'm sure. They're so good. You know, what I saw with Rivera's stuff and his painted stuff, so different than his pencil and ink
inked
stuff.
By his father.
Really?
Yeah, the Daredevil stuff is inked by his father. Yeah.
Wow.
I know, which is like really cool. Like, could you imagine that? Like, your father inking your penciled stuff? Like, that's awesome. That's so cool that you're able to do that, you know? Like, I don't know who his father, I mean, it's, I don't even know.
I wonder if Ryan Brown knows him.
Probably. Ryan Brown probably knows him, but yeah, it's inked by his dad.
Well, he did a hell of a job.
Yeah.
But one of the similarities in some of the panels, and especially in some of the faces, really getting an Eduardo Rizzo vibe in some of it.
From Rivera? Yeah, there's a lot of different, I mean, definitely Rizzo. I mean, there's you know, Marcos Martin. I think, you know, he seemed like he was, you know, channeling a bit, and I think they're going for that sort of, you know, early Marvel feel. You know, like that, and I love it. I think it's awesome. I mean, you know, that stuff is so cool, you know, he did a great job with it, and I don't know if that's his natural sort of pencil style or what, because I haven't seen that much of his
kind
stuff.
Kind of what we got from Ryan, you know, talking to him, is that he's one of those guys that is, whatever he does, he's going to be really good at it. I think he's a multidisciplinarian artist. You had said that he creates a lot of like sculptures for.
Well, he's a very heavy reference guy. I mean, if you follow his blog, like, he's always showing like photo references that he takes of himself and uses for like everything he does. I mean, he uses a lot of photo reference, but he does it in the right way, where it's just like he's using it for positioning and lighting, and then he draws a drawing on top. You know what I mean? Like, he's not tracing anything. Mm-hmm. But he also will, he'll sculpt, like, character busts and stuff for the same purpose.
One of the things I've been reading over the last couple of weeks, what I mentioned, is really kind of reading, you know, two or three issues of it a night and kind of taking my time with it. It's something that that Dal here at Challengers had suggested, and then Wood over on 11 o'clock had raved about it. Wood. And and I'm going to kind of bring it full circle and make a comparison to Daredevil Born Again, and that is Legion Lost.
You're all about the comparisons.
Well, I actually have an apt comparison on this one, and it's well thought out. Okay. So back off.
All right.
No, it is Legion Lost from DC, and it is some of the first work from Abnett and Lanning, you know, pre-Guardians of the Galaxy and all of that stuff. But it's written by Abnett and Lanning. It's drawn by Oliver Quapel, and Pascal Alexi, I think is how it's called. But this is early 2000s Legion, and Legion of Superheroes can seem impenetrable as a fan if you've never read them before, but this one, it is a jump right into it and learn about certain members of the Legion. Now, why I kind of compare this to Born Again and why I read it at the pace that I did is that this was written in the pre-writing for the trade time. And so there is supposed to be a significant amount of time that passes between each issue. Basically, like Born Again, Matt is that's a story that takes place over a long amount of time,
right.
And in between issues, it kind of Matt's despair sinks in. And you kind of need that the separation between issues to really kind of get that feeling. To read them back to back to back to back to back, you kind of lose that sense of how much despair he's being sunk into. Well, it's the same thing in Legion Lost, and the plot of the story is that they have saved the galaxy from being sucked into an interdimensional rift. You don't know about that story. You don't need to.
Been there.
Done that. Yeah. So they.
Whatever.
So they get shot through this rift, and it's only part of the Legion. It's not the entire Legion of Superheroes. It's I think eight of them or so, and they get shot.
I never know how big the Legion is.
It's like, huge. It's fucking huge.
Sometimes, but sometimes it's very small.
Exactly. And this is the sometimes it's kind of small Legion. You've got Ultra Boy, Saturn Girl, Quantum Gal. Livewire, who is Lightning Lad.
Why does he get a fancy name?
He's one of the original ones, so he felt like a change. Wildfire, Brainiac 5.1, Chameleon, and Umbra are the... And you also have Monstrous is in there.
Is it Chameleon?
Chameleon.
Well, I feel like it's
what?
A different name.
No, it's Chameleon.
Like Chemboy or something. I don't know.
It's Chameleon.
Is it Chameleon?
Yeah, it's Chameleon. Because they call him Cam through the entire book. So basically, they've been shot through an interdimensional rift, and you don't know how far, but it's a really fucking long way, like maybe outside of the known universe. And Element Lad has been with them, and he basically puts them into cocoons to protect them from the effects of the rift, and he doesn't know when they'll be found. So they wake up out of these cocoons the Element Lad has made, and they are immediately in the shit and kind of thrown into this this big galaxy-wide war. And they're lost, and they don't know how to get back, and they are constantly on the defensive. so I won't get into the entire plot of it. But what was great about it is that you have this team that was pushed to the absolute edge of what they were normally used to, and they're completely falling apart at the seams. Everything that makes them a team is being challenged and threatened at every turn. And I'm about halfway through this, and I'm like, you know what? This is as cool as any of the Byrne Claremont X-Men. I finally saw the connection, because there are a lot of people that say, you know, I grew up on Legion or I grew up on X-Men. This was so very similar to that era of X-Men, because it had the soap opera, it had the romances between team members and the angst between them, and not everyone gets along and they're fighting with each other.
They have a dude with claws that smokes cigars and he was Canadian.
They forget it. A big mutant, like beast woman, who was kind of badass. But and you got Brainiac 5, who's always kind of a dick. But so yeah, I mean, it was great, and I finally feel like I got the Legion. It's like, this is everyone who ever always told me that, oh, the Legion's great. I'm like, I'd read some, and Tom even gave me some.
But it's probably like that's a small sampling of Legion that most the rest of the Legion isn't anything like.
But now I feel like I can read more Legion. Oh, it was cool.
I've been one of those people that I want to like the Legion.
I think this is your book.
Like, I want to like them, but I've tried over and over again over the years to read Legion, and it's just like...
Me too.
I like it for a little while, but then it just always gets to be... There's too many characters. There's too much going on.
This is your book, my son. This is it.
We'll see. I have it. Because Dell pushed it on me, too. They must have ordered extra ones and needed to push it on everyone or something.
No big, wide cast. You have this set, and it's all new characters around them that are being introduced, so you're not dealing with tons and tons of continuity or the Fearsome Five or, you know, all that shit. It's like they are in a far away part of the universe,
right.
And everything that's being introduced is new to them, it's new to you, and Abnett and Lanning understand space opera so well.
Space opera.
And there's a great twist to it. Now the art, very interesting, because it's Quapel.
It's early Quapel.
Yeah, it is. It is coming out of the Image years. Right. Quapel.
It's not. What was the book?
It's not his Thor stuff.
Yeah.
But
unfortunately.
Unfortunately, yeah, it's not the Quapel that I've come to really love, but it's still beyond serviceable. It's better than serviceable it's art.
Better than mediocre.
It's better than mediocre. you saw his early
put
stuff.
That on the back of the book.
It's better than mediocre around comics. But yeah, no,
no, no, Chris Niesman.
But if you're looking for a good entry point to just kind of get the feeling,
read
for
some Legion,
for what the Legion stands for some of the core characters, and just a really good, if you like Abnett and Lanning's Guardians of the Galaxy or any of their big cosmic stuff, this is will fit in great with that.
I like Abnett and Costello.
Abnett and Costello's. Yeah. I don't know about their outer space stuff. Their baseball stuff.
Baseball.
Revolutionary. So anyway, Legion Lost. Really, really enjoyed it.
Cool.
Yeah.
Very nice.
So there you go.
I've read something else this week that I wanted to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Not something that I necessarily liked. It wasn't something I disliked. And I don't.
I
want to.
I think I know what you're going to talk about.
Yeah, I don't want to. I want to preface it by saying I'm not hating on it at all. It honestly piqued my interest into trying to figure out a writer and his fans. And whether
you're
or not,
walking down a very dark path.
No, I don't. No, and it's a writer we've talked about before on the show. And
give me more trouble.
Yeah, I probably am. But it's Brian Bendis is the writer, and the book is the latest Avengers number 15. And I'm not, like I said, I've liked his Avengers stuff. I'm more of a Brian Bendis fan than I'm not a Brian Bendis fan. So I'm not trying to rip on Bendis at all, but. With this particular book, it's basically a Spider-Woman story, and it deals with her insecurities about being an Avenger because her training is more espionage, and she was supposed to be like a seductress. And so she feels very sort of insecure on the Avengers team because she doesn't feel like she fits in. And then there was the stuff with the Kree Skrull thing. And I don't know. There was like, she doesn't feel like she quite fits into the Avengers, and she is trying to find like a defining moment of her life.
She doesn't feel like one of Earth's mightiest heroes.
Yeah. So that's kind of the basic story. And much, you know, Bendis has gotten into the habit, and he's sort of known for these. For a lot of his books, especially the big cast books, being told in this sort of interview flashback style. And he does it in this one again, where it's like, it starts off and it's a page of a bunch of little panels, and it's close-ups of these characters talking to a camera, basically, is what it seems like. Like they're
looking at the reader.
Yeah, they're looking at you, but to me it feels like they're answering someone's questions, like someone's interviewing
someone
them about what happened in the past. And I think he's tried to tie this into his whole verbal history of the Avengers that's been in the back of the books that I haven't read because I don't really care.
Sure.
But I think that's sort of what he's trying to tie in with that. But, I mean, he does this over and over again in a lot of his books where it's like a lot of panels of these characters talking to the screen in these close-up shots and then flashing back to the action of what they're talking about. And my thing is, like, as I'm reading it, I'm sitting there going, well, I know that ultimately probably nothing really bad is going to happen to Spider-Woman. You know what I mean? Like, I know as a comic book fan for, you know, 30 years that these characters nothing really horrible is going to happen to them. You know, nobody really dies. Nothing really terrible ever happens. But as a fiction reader, there's always that illusion that
something
I expect that something could, you know, happen to them. But with something like this, where I'm reading in a flashback, they're sitting here calmly telling me about Spider-Woman is calmly talking about a fight she had with a hammer-wielding Hulk. In past tense, I already know that she's gotten through it just fine. Mm-hmm. So the story sort of kills. I mean, any sort of tension is dead right there. Knowing now, like I said, on one hand, I kind of appreciate the fact that Bendis is sort of acknowledging the fact that we all know nothing's going to happen to him. But at the same time, like I said, as a reader, it takes me out of any illusion that something bad could happen to one of these characters that are superheroes fighting supervillains. You know what I mean? Like. So at that point, it's just sort of this weird storytelling device of why is he doing this? Like, why does he make the decision to tell his story in this fashion? I mean, one, I think it kills the tension. And two, you have an amazing artist like Chris Bacello, who's the artist on this particular issue. And I counted the pages, for a third of the book,
oh no,
he's drawing superheroes, talking heads. Third of the book. Now, the other two-thirds, a lot of his action. There's plenty of fights and all this stuff going on. But for a third of 22 pages, it's talking heads. And this isn't the first issue that this has ever happened. So it's like, why do you even bother having an artist like Bacello when you're going to have him draw heads over and over and over again? And like I said, I'm not trying to bash Bendis, but I really, really would like to sit down with him and talk to him about, like, why do you make this decision? What is your thought process behind this? Why do you think this is improving the story? And then I'd like to hear from fans of his, do you like this? Do people actually like this storytelling device that he uses? I know it's sort of interesting. I know he's sort of almost known for it. Do you just expect that from him now? Or do you actually think it's a better way of telling a story? Does it make the story better to you as a reader? To me, it doesn't.
Warren Ellis wrote something in an issue of Fell, and it's been, two, 3 years ago now anyway. But it was the... it was the interrogation issue of Fell, mm-hmm. where he had Officer Fell had captured some guy, arrested some guy, and the majority of the issue was an interrogation room scene.
Right.
And Ellis, more or less paraphrasing, he said, it was really hard because I promised myself I was only going to do this once, that I was only ever going to write one story where it was two people in a room talking to each other.
And, you know, that's fine. In that sense, want to do this because it's an interrogation scene, that makes sense.
Well, but the point is that you have to be very measured whenever you do that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, as a graphic designer, there's an old joke that, you know, if you remember the page turn effect.
Yeah.
There's a rule in graphic design. You use that once in your career and never ever again.
Right.
You know, so I think kind of what you're saying.
Or in Photoshop, you know, like a lens flare.
Yeah. You use it once and never again. Yeah. And this is maybe the thing with Bendis is that he fell in love with the lens flare and he keeps using it. It's, you know, show.
And that's what I'm wondering. Like, did he just scope. Because he sort of made a name for himself doing that? And you know, he kind of really did. Like, he started doing that stuff very early on, and like Torso and his original graphics.
Powers,
certainly.
Retro Girl.
And
story.
And mm-hmm. and I know he's sort of known for that. And like I said, it was sort of unique and interesting at the time. But it's like he keeps doing it and keeps doing it and keeps doing it. And I'm wondering, like, is he just doing it because that's what he thinks people want? Is he doing it because he honestly feels like it's the best way to tell this story? I find that hard to believe. Like, that's the best way that this story should have been told. It's, you know, it's, you're telling a story about, and it was a pretty decent issue about one character on the Avengers who, you know, is feeling very insecure about herself and then has sort of a moment where she, you know, proves to herself that she's good enough during this huge event of Fear Itself. But it's like, why, you know, like I said, there's 22 pages, 7 or 8 of them are talking heads.
There are 20 pages.
Marvel dropped their page count
to 20 pages.
And 7 of them.
At still $3.99.
Welcome back. Patrick has been taking care of customers.
I was here the whole time. What are you talking about?
Seven of them talking heads.
And it's the same 8-panel grid.
Yeah.
With just different images of Mockingbird repeated.
I can understand it if it, like in Powers, you had a lot of investigation and interrogation of characters because it was a cop show.
Yeah, right, it's a police procedural.
This is a superhero book.
The Avengers is not a fucking police procedural.
And yet he keeps trying to do the same thing with that book. Like I said, I'm not bashing the guy. I'm not a hater of Bendis' work. I think he's a good writer. I'm just really interested to know if
the thought process
behind it, and what fans think, what people that read the Avengers are fans of his, if they're just like, well, that's the way he writes, or do you actually like that? Do you like that he does that, you know, with these characters? You know, it's just like, man, it just seems like a waste of space to have all, you know, I just know every time I open a Bendis Avengers book, there's going to be page after page of superheroes sitting around a table or talking into a camera or talking about, and sometimes it's kind of cute and sometimes it's kind of interesting because you don't get that in a lot of other comic books, but it's like, shit, man, at some point I think you're just doing it way too much.
Somebody needs to punch someone in the fucking face.
Now more than ever, it seems like he's following that documentary style.
It's a documentary style
of interviewing, like, of The Office or Parks and Recreation.
And I know he's a big TV guy, and I know a lot of his writing has gotten, you know, a lot of his style choices come off of, you know, at one point it was very much West Wing sort of stuff. Yeah.
Sure, but he also takes a character that he likes a lot, like a Mockingbird,
mm-hmm.
and this is his way of getting her over to the current reading audience. And we don't even know what her new powers are, what she's capable of, so this is his way of saying, I think Mockingbird is a viable character and it's a big deal. This is her spotlight. It may not be the best way presented, but I understand.
And I got no problem with that. That's fine. Like I have no problem writing an entire issue about Spider-Woman in this. I thought it was a pretty good story.
But I completely agree with you about the literally it was 6 or 7 pages of just talking heads.
It was 7 pages of talking heads with Chris Pacello. It's like, dude, you have one of the best artists in comics and you're making him draw fucking close-ups of heads.
The one I'm talking about was Mike Deodato.
Everything Sal has just said about Spider-Woman, you could replace Mockingbird for the new Avengers issue that came out last week.
Are you talking about Spider-Woman?
Yeah.
I was talking about the Spider-Man.
Oh, I was talking about the Mockingbird
exactly.
one.
And that's what I was going to say before
same
you came
thing.
In.
Well,
it was the same.
Oh, yeah. Man, that's what I got for coming
and
late.
And it was the exact same thing you said.
Oh,
where
man, really?
Spider-Man,
it's almost like a formula. It's almost like he's got
inadequate.
This formula.
Yep, Spider-Woman's inadequate. Mockingbird's inadequate. I don't belong on the Avengers. I don't know what I'm doing here.
Yeah.
I've
been dead.
I have these weird powers now. And
like I said, I'm not trying to hate on the guy. I think he's a talented writer. But I just think that, and there's a lot of stuff he does in that issue, even and those issues, and in the Avengers that I've liked. But it's just like it just baffles my mind sometimes as a reader and as someone that is very much interested in the writing process of why do you keep making the same decision? Is it just because you're busy on the set of Powers, and you know, like,
no,
and I don't mean to say that as in a flippant sort of shot.
I assume this was written months ago. I think this is just his style.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'd mentioned design, and you know, designers, I have to challenge myself all the time, and a lot, you know, unsuccessfully, to stop using design crutches.
Yeah.
I'll use the same graphic technique to, you know, to build a layout, whatever, and designers develop design crutches, and you have to at some point say, I'm never going to do this type of thing again. And I think that Bendis has developed
and for a guy that
might be a little bit of a crutch.
And it's sort of ironic because I think he sort of built his career on doing sort of innovative stuff.
Yeah, to me.
I mean, he did, but now it's become, well, that's all you do. You know, like now you do it that, you know, you do, and maybe it's just like, well, I don't know. Maybe it's just me, but
I think this interview thing that he's doing is just a step too far from what he's good at, the sitting around a table, I think, and characters.
Yeah, do you want to read that?
Look at the back wall on the Stuart Immonen and New Avengers pages, and it's all Avengers sitting around a kitchen table.
I know, Sal's walking around here looking at the art, and he's like, oh, it's everyone around the table talking. I wonder if Bendis wrote this.
He did.
Well, you know, I know. I was being sarcastic. I know, but that's the thing. Like, as I know, he sells books, but as actual comic book readers, are there people out there that enjoy that?
I mean, I enjoy it too.
A little bit. Like, I think, hey, it's kind of novel to have superheroes sitting around. You don't see that all the time. It's like, oh, you're sort of putting them in a sitcom-y kind of way, and. But it's like every issue.
I gotta believe there's a generation of comic fans that have only ever read Avengers this way, because he's been doing the Avengers for how many years now?
Yeah, that's true.
That's scary.
Yeah,
that's fucking frightening.
Because like the new Avengers book Pat mentioned with Mockingbird, Spider-Man coming in and wanting to quit the team, and that was interesting. Him coming to the table they're all sitting at and saying, "Hey,"
because Victoria Hand is still
because of Victoria Hand, right? And then you see Wolverine go, "Come here," and they walk off, and that's what I wanted to hear about. I didn't want to see more of Mockingbird going. Yeah, I don't know what
I still think it's hilarious that I came in late and thought you were talking about a wholly different issue. The same thing.
That is telling. I mean, there you go.
And this is the retailer me, but I want to go back to the point of it's 20 pages for $3.99. When DC announced their Draw the Line at $2.99 initiative, and they said, okay, we're making our books $2.99. We're cutting two story pages out, though.
Yeah.
And Marvel went on a war path saying, oh, my God, you're taking money out of creators' pockets, and how dare you, and you hate the fans. Now they're doing 20 pages for a buck more. But who knows? Maybe that's the way they're going to keep money in their creators' pockets by charging a buck more.
Yeah, they're paying all those creators. They got to pay Chris Pacello to dry heads.
Yeah. Well, as you pointed out, you got one of the best action guys in the business.
I mean, there's few that do it better, and you got them drawing close. And I'm reading the issue, and I'm just sitting there going, this is a fucking waste of talent. I mean, and if I'm Chris Pacello, I'm just like, what the fuck has this guy got me doing? You know, I mean, like, what artist wants to sit there and draw fucking heads over and over again in a 22 issue or 20 issue comic book? It's like, give me some shit to draw, man. I got to sell some pages, you know, too.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I don't know. But going back to the Marvel thing you were talking about, there was I saw one of the things that was announced today was the Marvel, or it wasn't announced today, it was announced a few days ago, but the season one graphic novels that they're doing.
You mean the Earth One graphic novels?
I had to bring that up because I'm like, man, you motherfuckers are full of shit, Marvel.
Not only are they doing that, but they're doing like 20 of them.
Yeah.
And it's not like the big name creators, it's a bunch of.
Right.
I mean this with
secondary.
As much respect as possible, the B-listers.
Yeah, yeah. No, I just think it's hilarious because Marvel does. I mean, I think their game plan now is really just sit back and wait.
Let DC do something. Talk shit about it.
And then 6 months later,
if it's successful, do the same thing.
And they're going to do the same thing.
A good idea is an idea worth taking. And that's how most people in retail run their businesses. I mean, there's nothing we do that we don't mind anybody else taking from us and vice versa.
I'm waiting for, let's see, next San Diego.
But do you talk a shit about it and then steal
yeah,
it?
Yeah, okay.
That's the thing that I have a problem with.
Not publicly.
It's like, don't talk shit about it and then use it later and then like pretend like you fucking innovated
something. But it's so great to hear their spin when they do that. Like, well, here's why it's great now.
Yeah.
It was shit before, but now.
Now it's old. You're welcome.
Well, Comic Public.
There was another thing they announced.
Well, next year, what's the over under by San Diego next year that Marvel does a line wide relaunch and goes day and date digital?
Well, they announced that.
Day and date digital
of Amazing Spider-Man.
They've been doing day and date digital in the Ultimate titles, but for the X-Men and the for Spider-Man. Spider-Man starting this week with Spider-Island and X-Men with all the new number ones.
And they say
that they'll do it whenever there's a good jumping on point.
Okay.
So point one issue?
Yeah. But they didn't, I don't know if they're, they didn't mention what the prices are going to be, if they're going to be what they're currently at.
$3.99. I don't know.
Probably. I honestly don't know what their prices are. And even DC's day and date digital, their prices are $2.99 or $3.99, depending on the cover price, for the first 30 days. Then they drop to $1.99.
Which I think is great. And then they drop to 99 cents after like 3 months or something.
Do they really?
After like three months or six months, they drop again to 99 cents.
I'm painfully, and I don't mean to go on a topic that you guys weren't prepared to talk about, but I'm painfully unaware of the way digital comics work. I do have an iPad, but I don't have a lot. I don't subscribe to anything on it. But is anybody offering trades for digital? Like, you know, right now they're just doing the songs, but they're not doing the albums.
They do some collections. You can do some OGNs. Yeah.
I understand that they put Bone out there, but only in the single issue, not in a giant.
Which is stupid.
Yeah, because, I mean, most people want to buy the album.
Yeah.
I think that they're very afraid that people are not going to go for a $20 digital comic.
Well, they're not. You know? That's why you put your trades at $10.
Well, but they'd rather put out 10 99-cent books or something, or 10, you know, I don't know.
Did you guys hear about the...
$6, $3.
They announced, because we've always wondered where the digital sales are coming from, what part of the country, and how much money is actually doing it. And I can't remember what the figure was that was released a couple days ago, but it was one for every 1,500 or something like that. One for every 1,500 in print, there's one digital copy sold. But the property Pocket God that Ape Entertainment has, that was an iPhone game first, they had their digital comics as well. They've sold like 1,500 copies of the comic and 150,000 digital downloads.
Wow.
So this is an example of somebody who's actually marketing to the right...
To the right audience. Granted,
it's a thing. It's a property that they licensed to do a comic for, so it had a built-in audience. But they're showing you that it can be done.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's what, you know... I think with DC's whole initiative, and I think what any smart, you know, comic publisher is going to find out is that they can sell comics to people that don't normally buy comics, and that's where you're going to have to.
You have to
find
that. You can't cannibalize the existing comic public.
And you have an opportunity now with the iPads, with the tablets, millions and millions and millions of tablets. I mean, you know, a small percentage of tablet owners buy comics. And you're selling way more digital comics than you are, you know, print ones.
That's true.
At that point. And so it's just a matter of capturing that audience. How do you get that audience?
From the perspective of a publisher, is that I never have to worry about underprinting a title.
Yeah, well, it's always there.
Digitally, it's always going to be there.
I never have to, you know, it's like Chew, with all the buzz that Chew had when it came out, and it sold out like 5 times. Well, yeah, they're only printing, you know,
1,100
copies on each print run. You know, so, you know, how many copies can you sell digitally?
We try hard not to be a collectible story. We want to be a comic book story. We want people to read what they buy.
Yeah.
We don't do variant covers because we don't want people to, like, to bet on investments and things. But you can't.
Like Chris does with original art.
Yeah.
Oh, so I looked up the information on Six Gun while I was over at the store.
Yeah. Cullen and Brian, just so you know, Chris only bought that page so that when you made the movie, you're selling.
So the announcement is it's going to be on Sci-Fi and it's going to be the first trade roughly, but no production company, no producers involved, no names, just Yeah, it was
optioned.
Yeah,
it's been optioned.
So, and, okay. And that's great, and we love those guys, but yeah. We want to know
hopefully not
who's
by the same people that did Stan Lee's Harpies. That was not good.
Hey, Sal, you were talking before about doing your own radio shows when you were a kid.
Yes.
Can you put in the sound of squealing tires just right there in that big pause? What were we talking about?
Digital comics.
But I was going to... Okay, so we're not a collectible store, and it's something like Chew. So many people still, I want a first print of that. We want you to read it more than anything else, but so many people want to own it and want to have that, and that's a portion of the market share that you can't ignore. And so many people come in and say, do you have the first print of, you know, whatever this book is? Mm-hmm. It's like, well, we can get you a second print. No, I want the first.
Sure.
It doesn't hurt the story at all.
Well, but here's the thing. I mean, that's the thing, and I think DC, you know, everybody's sort of, not everybody, but there's been people that sort of joking about, well, they're doing this whole big initiative thing because of the success of the Earth One Superman graphic novel that came out.
No shit.
And yeah, and that's the thing. It's like, oh, yeah, they went, oh, holy crap.
Yeah.
If
yeah.
you give, you know,
duh.
And we were talking about this earlier today. It's like, I think looking over the list of artists and writers on 52, and once again, I don't want to take anything away from anyone, but when I first looked over the list, there were a lot of names there that I didn't recognize. And at first I'm like, oh, geez, I don't know if that's a good thing. But then I'm like, well, you know, it seems like DC is sort of going for, let's sell the names of the characters and the books, not the creators who are on them. Because Joe Schmo on the street with an iPad doesn't give a shit who is writing or drawing the book anymore. You know, the larger audience that you're trying to get, they don't know who anyone is in this industry anyway. So it doesn't matter if you have a big name on it. Doesn't, you know, that you're trying to find a lot larger.
The characters will always outlive.
It's Superman. It's, you know, Batman. It's, it doesn't matter.
Hey,
you know,
man, whenever we were growing up, Marv, there was no bigger writer in comics than Marv Wolfman. Very few people.
I didn't know who the first guy that I ever knew, like, his name and associated with him with a book was John Byrne.
Yep.
That was the first guy I ever knew. I never paid attention to who wrote a book or who drew a book. I did not care. It didn't matter to me. All I cared about was the X-Men or or Spider-Man or Daredevil. I didn't know any of those guys. I didn't know who any was. You know, if they changed a creative, you know,
for our generation,
he
was the first. He was the first creator that people followed.
Yeah,
and that's why people went
and it
to
became
the
that the industry yeah. became that where it was who's going to be on this book, not what's happening in the book.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like, who's writing this? Who's the creative team on this book? And I think DC's trying to get away from that and going, no, this is Superman, and this is something you can jump on, and this is going to be an interesting story. I mean, obviously, you still have some, you know, you still have your Grant Morrisons and Jim Lees and Jeff Johns, but a lot of these guys, I don't even know their fucking name. I have no idea who they are. And I think part of that is maybe price, and part of that is trying to get away from, you know,
hitting
deadlines.
Make sure you hit this deadline. Yeah, it's funny because whenever I was growing up, a huge Doctor Who fan, and now with Patrick here, I have another Doctor Who fan.
Jesus,
on the panel.
We're on the Doctor Who side of the table.
But
we're at high.
I used to just devour the Doctor Who the pocket books, the pocket novels,
the Target ones.
Yeah, 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 and it was great. All the Doctor Who movies or the stories they would publish out as novelizations, and I just devoured those when I was a kid. And I remember my dad asking me, you know, I was reading Doctor
Who. Why don't you go ahead and play football, you nerd?
Hey, you girl, stop playing with your doll.
Why are you wearing a dress, Chris?
But no,
Jesus, I thought I had a son, not a daughter.
No, here, use this multicolored scarf to dry your tears.
I have one, but I was reading, I don't know, like Doctor Who, Pyramids of Mars or something. My dad said, oh, who wrote that book? And I was like, I looked at him and I was like, I don't know. I didn't care. It was a Doctor Who book. And I didn't care who wrote it. And it's kind of the same thing with DC. It's I don't think that people care who writes The Flash or Superman or Batman.
Well, that's what they're hoping, that they can grab that audience that it doesn't matter, that they don't know any of these people anyway. Mm-hmm. There's the amount of people that own iPads that don't know who Jeff Johns or Jim Lee are is way bigger than the amount of people that do know. And that's who they're trying to capture, and you know, we'll see what happens. But
I hope they capture a ton of people. But I'm just enough older than all of you guys to.
You're not older than me, are you?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Are you?
That I was like when you were talking about these Doctor Who novels. Uh-huh. In my head, I'm like, oh, was it Philip Hinkelcliff or Eric Saward or Terrence Diggs? Because I was at that point yeah. where I was. I knew the writers, and when you said it was John Byrne, a question that you followed, a question Dal asked people is, what does Spider-Man look like to you? When you picture Spider-Man in your head, who did it? Who's your
is
go-to?
Is it McFarlane? Is it Romita?
Yeah, and for me, it's Romita Sr.
Yeah,
sure.
But Dal was always, because it was Ross Andrew when I started reading regularly, but it's always been the iconoclastic Romita Sr. for me. But yeah, you're right, with all this list
Mike Zeck for me.
Mike Zeck.
I love Mike Zeck Spider-Man.
He's awesome, but that's late.
Yeah,
shit.
But at what point would he have been doing the book that you would have...
Secret Wars.
Okay, that's good. That's fine.
That's when you jumped into comics, isn't it?
Secret Wars. Secret Wars,
you
yeah.
didn't start reading comics with Death of Superman, didn't you? That was your first book.
Hey.
It was Art Adams that got Dal reading a lot of stuff, 85? So that's his go-to for a lot.
85, honestly, probably 84, 85.
Yeah.
But there's a... When we were talking about this before... And the many of times we should go. I'm 43.
Oh, you are older.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I feel good now.
You feel young and spry.
Yeah, I feel younger. It's always nice to have an older guy around, you know? Wisdom.
I'm usually the older guy around. but a lot of these creators, I don't. And they've done a tremendous amount of work getting comic creators from around the world. But there's so many names I can't even pronounce. And there's so many names
Giuseppe
that...
Giuseppe Camo.
Okay.
Yeah, he's awesome.
But I love Camo.
He's got a nickname. You can, you know, relate to Camo.
But Dal is so good at keeping up with all these people. And I have to say, Dal, what did Francesco
Villafranco?
Yeah.
Villafranco?
What did he hit? Dal can tell me all these things. And
how do you say Brahemo? Bermejo. Not that I really...
Chris Bermeham. Bermeham.
Yeah, he did one of the we were looking at the Threadless tees.
Yeah, the Noir series. Yeah.
I'm gonna head up to the store tomorrow and see if they have them.
I think they just debuted them in San Diego. I don't know if they have them in there. They should have them here, but I don't know if they do.
You don't think they have them at their home store here in Chicago?
Bone first, Chris.
Yeah.
I'm going up that way.
I'm wearing my new Bone Face.
That's awesome.
I did notice that right now. It's a Batman that's bleeding profusely from the nose and into his open mouth.
I thought it was Paul Pope.
Yeah, it's kind of popish. It was a guy I just happened to run across it was another blog. Somebody posted he's a Liverpool-based artist called his nickname or whatever his artist name is Boneface, but I felt bad because like I tweeted about him. I'm like, hey, check out this cool artist. He's from London, and his Twitter account was Boneface, but it was like B0NEFACE, and he's from Liverpool. So I got it all fucking wrong. And he tweeted me back. He's like, I'm from Liverpool, and it's Boneface, but thank you for the tweet.
that's my new...
Oh, what? That is awesome.
Isn't that the geekiest, snobbiest...
You know we're on a podcast, right, guys?
Box Ale is intended only for responsible time lords.
Oh, it's a fucking Doctor Who.
A legal drinking age. Jesus. Drink responsibly and with moderation. Please do not drink and time travel.
It's Blue Box Ale. It's simply regenerating.
I don't understand.
That's pretty great.
It means nothing to me. I know the TARDIS.
It's a beer shirt.
I love that you can be so vehement in your fandom.
Yeah.
And
so condescending.
Cast such aspersions on other people.
Yeah, that's what I do.
You are such a nerd.
No, I am not. I am not. Well, I'm sorry. Doctor Who is totally way too nerdy for me, but that's.
But do you have like a Star Wars or a Star Trek? Or
Star Wars, cool.
Yeah, I'm not a Star Wars guy.
Oh, hey,
that's your problem, buddy.
Star Trek.
That's not my problem. That's your problem.
You're not a Star Wars guy?
I don't dislike it, but I'm not. I haven't seen all the movies, and I'm not a huge fan.
Wow. What the fuck?
Wow.
All right.
Wow. New York pizza.
Between the wrong pizza,
between the
Star
pizza
Wars.
And that, Jesus Christ. I don't even know what to say anymore about you.
Wait, hold on. I'm also drinking Liney's Summer Shandy, provided by Chris Revican. Thank you, Chris. So why don't you mock this one as well, because it's not you.
No, I like the Summer Shandy.
Really?
Actually, I'll have a Shandy. Do we have a Shandy?
Yeah, there's
a fridge.
Okay.
Let's just drive your car. We could drive all day. Let's just get the hell away from here. For I am sick again. Just plain sick to death of the sound of my own voice.
red wine and just go flying. We could do the things all the
time. We're speaking about Star Trek briefly and the Legion. Star Trek and the Legion is a crossover. What is that about?
Okay, first of all,
space.
The Final Frontier.
They're using the original series, Star Trek, not the current series, not the J.J. Abrams re-energized, no pun intended.
They're using the
hey,
the,
remind me, I want to talk about that when you guys are done. But go ahead. Okay. Go on.
Talk about what?
But they're using the
J.J. Abrams Star Trek.
Okay, but they should be using that because that's what's in the public mind. That's the new thing. That is what has taken over. Like that's a reboot of Star Trek.
They may not be able to.
J.J. Abrams won't
J.J. Abrams will be like, sure, give me $1 billion.
But they're also using the 70s Legion.
Well, I mean, they haven't. This is what they've been doing, though. Like,
this is nerdcore.
Like,
they did that.
They did that whole infestation thing, and it was like they go Ghostbusters and
Transformers, G.I. Joe.
But it's all the old.
But they also couldn't cross over. They were separate. It was the infestation that went from book to book.
Right. Those characters didn't cross over. But I was just saying, those are all the. Like, they were using the old Star Trek.
Yeah, that's true.
And the old Transformers. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just something like IDW. It must just be a licensing.
But on the other hand, they have Phil and Jeff Moy doing the art, and that is totally my Legion wheelhouse.
Oh, that's so great.
They're
Wisconsin. They're local.
They were Chicago guys. They went to Northern when I was going to Northern. So they were from around here. They moved up to, I think, Michigan and do a lot of video game work now.
Okay. I thought they were in, like, Madison or something.
Maybe they are. I just know they moved north.
Yeah. The Moy brothers.
I bet you they don't like New York-style pizza.
Probably not.
I bet they
it's
just
always
eat
coming back to the next
You're never not going to let this go.
No. I'm like a pit bull. Are you kidding me? I'll never, ever.
Welcome to the latest episode of Around Pizza, where today we talk about sausage.
So the boys are going to do that.
Yes.
Very cool.
Which is awesome.
Why do I know that?
They did Legion.
Jeff Moy and Corey Carini did Legion forever. When it was Legionnaires, when it was Mark Waid and Tom Pyre were doing it. And Phil Moy did. Powerpuff Girls for a long time. Yeah.
They were almost guests at Windy City Con, yeah, but their schedules.
They were one of the first people I know that had an 11x17 color printer, and then they could print out all their own prints to sell at shows. And I'd be looking at one of Phil Moy's prints. I'm like, oh, that's so good. He's like, yeah, it's the last one and it's beat up, but I'll have more tomorrow. I'm like, how do you have a printer that'll print tonight? He's like, I do it myself. I'm like, what?
That's awesome.
Did you go to the future?
How did you do that?
Well, he was working on Legion.
Do you have lithography stones in your basement and rollers? And... Yeah, that was when I realized that technology is amazing.
Back in it's olden awesome. Times.
But yeah, them doing that is amazing. That's cool. Me more excited. Because I was never a Star Trek fan. I was a Next Generation fan and beyond. Did I say fanned with a D?
Fanned.
I fanned myself for a while, and then I would watch Star Trek.
What were you going to...
The J.J. Abrams Star Trek. I was reading a thing the other day about it. Somehow it related to that. But then it was talking about how this particular writer was sort of angry that Abrams had done what he had done to reboot...
Re-energize the entire franchise, given it a great springboard to do more stories.
But here's the thing: like it made absolutely no sense to me because he was complaining because of sort of the time, you know, how he
what
like
they did was they eliminated everything that had happened.
But they didn't eliminate it.
I mean, it all happened and it counted, but they're starting back. It's like it's time travel.
It's an alternate 1985.
To me, it's like you can't friggin' make anybody happy,
right?
No.
Because he made it so that everything that happened
counted. Yes,
he didn't erase it.
It's all canon.
But we can now start over for a new generation of people with those same characters tell them they're all new stories. And people were pissed off about that.
William Shatner is getting old.
No, I know. That's what I'm saying. It's like at some point, I don't think he could have done it any better. I don't think he could have had.
Brilliant.
And it's like, but you can't fucking make people happy. No matter what you do, you cannot make people happy. And I read that. I'm just like, this doesn't even make... You're insane. You must be a fucking insane person to think that way.
J.J. Abrams snuck into that guy's house, went down to his basement, took all of his VHS tapes that he had recorded all the
original stuff. That shit's on Blu-ray, man.
And burned them.
He just magnetized them.
I mean, I'm an original Star Trek fan. I like Generation.
It's still
after
there.
That. I know. Well,
you can watch it forever.
I'm not insane.
You're not insane.
I don't know the source material for this story, but Dow was telling me recently that there was a conversation between, say, Jonathan Frakes and Patrick Stewart and William Shatner and Leonard Nimoy. And they were talking about Next Generation versus original series. And they pointed out to Shatner.
Did they fight?
No, they didn't fight.
Oh.
But did you see the arm wrestling thing?
No.
It was Shatner and who's the kid? Chris Pine. They run into each other at like in a green room at a convention. They don't say a word. There's a table in between them. They sit down and arm wrestle. Like, I mean, and this happened. Like, there's
photos. Who won?
I don't know. I think
Shatner.
Oh, come
Shatner.
On. You can't have the story at the end.
I don't know if they said who won. I don't know. But there's actual, like, photography of this happening. I was like, that's awesome. Anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
But they pointed out to Shatner that every member of the original series of the main cast had guest starred on Next Generation except for Shatner.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they kind of were a little miffed and, like, called him out on it. And he's like, they said, our show is really good and everyone liked it. And he goes, I don't know. I don't watch TV. Like, what do you mean you watch TV? He goes, I don't watch TV. I don't watch anything I've been in. I don't watch any TV. What about T.J. Hooker? Well, I directed some of those, so I watched those at the time. But I it's so arduous for me to make a show. I don't watch it when it's done. I don't watch TV. And they're like, oh, okay. I guess
it's really good.
I'm too busy being Shatner.
Yeah, right.
Do you ever watch his interview show?
I have seen it a few times. What is it?
I don't know.
Burning Line or something or.
It is the oddest setup.
Well, yeah, it's like the connected couch where you're sitting on different sides of each other but facing one another.
Like one of those romantic.
Yeah. And he's sitting there interviewing them, and it's so bizarre. It's worth watching.
It's great.
But it's so
as
weird.
As he looks deeply into their eyes and a hand up, Chris, lean in so I can stroke the side of your face.
It's pretty much like that, yeah.
I always wonder with Shatner, like, does he know what he's doing?
Oh, he's got to know.
I mean, you look at, like, when he was doing, you know, there's the famous, you know, music videos of him, you know.
He put out an album recently, and he covers the song Common People. And he's got Ben Folds and Joe Jackson, on, which is why I know about
that's
it.
That's awesome.
And it's She Came From Greece. I can't remember how it goes.
It's the same way.
Yeah.
That's doing, like, an homage to what he did back in the 70s. Did he know back then what he was doing, or was he seriously... Because it's so bad, and so it's like, does he know he's joking around?
I don't know.
You know, does he know what he's doing, or is he just so fucking clueless at that time, and so, like, ego-driven that he thinks it's good at that time? That's what I, you know, it's
at
like...
At that point, I had no idea who the fuck he was, so I don't... I want to believe that everything now, because I loved Boston Legal.
Oh, yeah.
And he was so great in that. Denny Crane.
I just wonder, like, if he's cultivated that now where... Hey, I was kidding. Because I know, like,
is he self-aware?
Was he at the time?
Frankly, I don't want him to admit anything because I wouldn't believe it.
Well, I just look at like the original Batman TV series, and now you have what's his name,
Adam West,
who like talks about how we knew it was camp, and we knew what we were doing. It's like bullshit, motherfucker. You're just a bad actor. You did not know what you were doing at the time, and now you're trying to retcon it into we were being campy on purpose. Fuck you.
The one thing about William Shatner I've always believed is that he killed one of his wives.
What?
One of his wives drowned in a pool.
Oh.
And he was one of the founder and called 911. Now he had a show called Rescue 911 for how many seasons? Where it was always like dissecting 911 calls, and his 911 call was, my wife, my beautiful wife, she's in the pool. She's not breathing. Like, well, sir, can you get to her? She's in the pool. Send help. Okay, so we're send help, my wife. And I'm sure, I mean, granted, the man's wife could probably die in the pool, and I'm being insensitive, and he might have actually found
her body.
How many
people are you going to insult on one podcast?
But everybody who listens. But it's just like, man, you know what to do. Like, in these situations, you should know exactly what to do to make the 911 call, because you've done this for years. But if you want people to believe that you have lost it and are full of grief, you act the way he acted. Go, well, that's go sort online. Of like,
that's sort of an Ouroboros of, you know.
Objection.
He's acting badly so that people will believe that he's not acting. But it's William Shatner, so he's a bad actor acting badly so people will think that he's not acting badly.
One of the things that the Apple Store always does for their employees is one of the rules is no matter what a customer says, whatever they mispronounce, don't correct them. Like if they said, yeah, I wanted that iPod. Like, okay, here's your iPod, sir. Thank you for asking.
Oh, God, I could never work there. Never correct anybody. There's no fucking way I could do that.
I bring that up because I was always taught it was Ouroboros.
But
Ouroboros?
Yeah.
Really?
The snake eating itself? Oh,
hey, I'm not saying that I'm right.
It's Bacalo.
Bacalo?
No, it's Bacello.
It's a Bacello?
It's Bacello.
Ha ha. I thought it was Bacalo.
The only time I correct people with comic artist names is when they've personally corrected me. So let me get this out of the way. Imonen.
Yes.
Bacello. Sienkiewicz.
I knew Sienkiewicz.
Perez. Fabre.
Listen, I don't really give a shit how you pronounce any of their fucking names.
Is it really Bacalo?
Bacello. Bacello.
You said Bacalo.
Bacello.
I thought it was Bacalo.
It's spelled Bacalo.
Ouroboros?
Or Bacello.
How do you say it?
Ouroboros.
Ouroboros?
Break it down to our Rob or Ross.
No.
Ouroboros.
There's no U.
Maybe the way you spell it. Hmm. It's an English word, so the U could have been taken out. I don't care. Sal taught me how
I know, to say Mjolnir.
It is Mjolnir, you're right.
But I was always wrong
It's Santulos. That's how you say pizza, Santulos.
That's horseshit is how I would say that one. I used to say, it's Icarus, right, is the correct pronunciation?
Icarus, yes.
I used to say Icarus.
Icarus.
Which is, I think, a much better pronunciation.
Yeah.
It sounds better than Icarus.
I always pronounce the word chaos, chaos.
Did you really?
Well, when I was a kid reading it, and you're like, chaos at Project Chaos. Pegasus. But, you know, just stop. If you've never heard the word, sound it out. It's C-H-A-O. Sure.
Let's wrap this one up. We don't have comic book retailers on our show.
And I'm sure the next time that we talk in August...
That far away.
It's like a couple of days.
Oh yeah. Well, you know.
We'll be able to talk about San Diego announcements.
Screw San Diego.
Well, hopefully one of the announcements that we get to talk about is the coronation of this as the best comic book shop in America.
Oh yeah. We'll see.
I don't have high hopes on that. We've made it to the finals.
Bullshit.
We've made it to the finals. Of course, I hope. Okay, well, I have high hopes, but I don't actually expect it. We made it to the finals, which is what we did last year, and that's pretty
Congratulations.
Great.
Congratulations.
It's only our second year of eligibility. And here's where I'm a huge dick and say, Chris, it's the world. It's not America. It's the best store in the world.
Hey, I wanted to promote something before we go.
Go for it.
I have a new podcast that I'm doing with my family.
It's called Driving and Crying?
It's called Driving and Crying Podcast.
I love that band.
No, it's called Drive N Movie Podcast. It's drive-n-movie.com. Yeah, I know it's kind of confusing, but it's just a movie podcast. We go and see a movie, and then we talk about it on the ride home, so... Go check it out. You might like it. We've only got 3 episodes, but we're going to see Captain America this weekend.
So the cool thing about Sal's podcast is that it's not like a
3-hour. It's not as long as the movie. It's a quick car ride. It's like 20 minutes.
Yeah, it's like 20-minute show, and it's literally just, you know, we are getting out of theater, getting in the car, pressing record, and however long it takes us to get home, we talk about whatever movie we just saw. And we are going to change things on this next one. We're going to actually talk about... the movie on the way there and on the way back, so we can kind of...
Do you ever find yourself driving around the block because you're not done talking?
I did, yeah. on the last one on Harry Potter, I was driving around the block, and my niece is like, where is he going? Because I had a lot to say. For those of you that know, I'm not the biggest Harry Potter fan, so I had quite a bit to say about Harry Potter. But, yeah, please check it out, and it's nothing like... Well, I mean, it's sort of like this, but not... It's nothing like Around Comics. It's very... loose, and it's me and my niece and or two nieces and my nephew.
Because this is so tight.
Well, it's just it's a different sort of thing.
No, it's very different, and it's entertaining. Yeah. I've listened.
Well, thank you. Please have
me slave driver. You know, crack
doesn't have Chris just stepping on my jokes and killing. You know,
but it does still have equal amounts of profanity.
Lots of swearing, and lots of yes. I'm not.
What was the Driving and Crying song? Fly Me Courageous.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going out on
DriveNmovie.com.
Drive-n-movie.com.
We're on Twitter. We have a Facebook page. please give us iTunes reviews and fucking go listen to it, people. You know, 5 years worth of Around Comics podcast, I haven't asked for much. So go listen. My niece and nephew will cry if you don't listen to
our podcast. Yeah, you haven't asked people to do that until you had your previous podcast that lasted.
That was not my podcast. I was only on that podcast.
I apologize.
The demise of that podcast is solely on the shoulders of Mr. Scotty Young.
I understand.
So
I think Burton and Braxton still cry about that.
Yeah, well, we had fun. It was cool, but I just didn't, you know, it was too. This one was, I want to do a movie podcast, but I really want it to be the easiest goddamn thing I could possibly do. Oh, I'll just talk about it on the drive home, and there you go. That's all it is.
Go.
So
there you go. Yeah. Well, we're definitely going out on some
driving
and crying tonight.
I want to bring up the fact that next Wednesday, the 27th, a friend of our own comics, Mr. Ryan Stegman.
That dick.
Yep. Oh, we knew him when he was just a wee
Ryan Steg. He wasn't even a man. He was Steg boy.
Paolo had said, Ryan's, you know, since Ryan's been doing Amazing Spider-Man, he's turned into a huge douche. And I wanted to say, has he been doing Amazing Spider-Man for the last 10 years?
So he's coming out for Spider-Man
Day,
he's
coming
out
for Spider-Man Day. We've got, he did the cover to that issue, and it's actually featuring, we'll have a Challengers cover for it, which is pretty cool. Ryan will be here for two separate signings from 11 to 2 and then again 5 to 8. We will also have Spider-Man here.
What?
Yes, ooh. Spider-Man will be here. There'll be Spider-Man-themed treats. I don't know what those are. Jimmy's doing
that's
those.
That's the special guest.
Those are chocolate-covered spiders.
And then there'll be Mary Jane and Gwen Stacy for part of the day.
Nice.
I have a Boba Fett helmet I could wear.
All right, that'll work. We'll just paint it silver and call you the Shockmaster. That's a wrestling reference no one will get.
And Chris, the comic book swap.
Oh, yeah, we didn't actually talk about that at all.
We did.
Okay.
You have Purvain, your store.
I was listening until you were done talking about that. I came back in like, oh, what did I miss, guys? Nothing? Okay.
The next great comic book swap, probably the best way, and it gives me a chance to pimp my other show. You can just go to the 11 o'clock comic forums, and I'm sure that you will post
that shithole.
Absolutely.
Oh, sorry. Did I say that out loud?
As I said, absolutely, after you go to
that
shithole.
I love that place.
You know sure how people that would say, no, just kidding. There's none of that here. It's all serious. Everybody means it.
No, it's really a shithole.
No, we
love the...
I mean, the guys that run it are dickholes, but it's a nice forum.
All right. Everyone has
love
a...
Those
wait,
guys.
I got one more. I'm not done. Yeah, okay. Rizzo, Eduardo Rizzo.
Oh, wait.
Yes.
Friday, August 12th, because you probably won't record before that.
Don't come to that, because I want to be the only one here.
To buy every piece of art that's there.
No. I want a Rizzo page so bad. I don't really buy much art, but Rizzo's a guy that...
The cool thing about that is not only will Eduardo Rizzo be in attendance, but so will Brian Azzarello and Dave Johnson.
Oh, Christ on the cross.
Yeah. Those guys.
What day?
And there's a bottle of 18-year-old whiskey in that room we're going to be
Friday.
Cracking into. It's the Friday of Wizard World, starting at 7 o'clock.
Oh, sweet.
I am bringing my entire 100-issue run of
you
100
dick.
Bullets.
Are you really?
I'm not going to do anything with it. I'm just
going to bring
them
in the car.
He just wants a little cart behind
him. I'm going to bring a gun and shoot you.
No,
honor of 100 bullets.
I had
100 times. I have 100 bullets at home.
I've had Rizzo, or not Rizzo, I've had Azzarello sign numbers 1, 25, 50, 75, and 100. So I just did every 25 issues. I had him sign those issues, and I'll be able to have the other.
Well, I don't know. Starting at number one isn't 20. I'm kidding. I'm just being a jerk. Never mind.
I'm going to bring a gun in a briefcase and have him sign it. That'd be kind of sweet. Wouldn't
that
be like, hold a briefcase and click, open it up, pull out a pistol?
I don't want you to sign anything.
I just want you to handle all of these 100 bullet cases.
as you know, we
just spilling
about
bullets out on the table. Oh, excuse me. I got an issue in here.
We talked about the great artist editions from IDW, and they're great collected editions that come out. But Azzarello was telling us about this Spanish 100 collection.
In the briefcase. Oh, my God. How great is that?
And
that.
I was like, it's in Spanish.
So I want that. And he's like, it's in Spanish. I was like, I don't want to read it, which maybe you don't want to say to the author.
The writer. Yes.
Don't they have L-100 bullets?
Yeah.
But yeah, I want to.
I got a cousin I could get to read it to me.
So when we figured out we were doing this, and we asked Eduardo to have a bunch of the Flashpoint Batman stories pages, and down there, like, we got to get poker chips. We got to get Wayne Casino poker chips. So we looked into it and started pricing it, and then we were like, well, it's kind of a lot. We have to order a ton, but it'd be really cool. And then DC announces at San Diego they're giving out Wayne Casino poker chips on different colors for different days. Like, dear DC Comics, can we have a bunch of red ones that are left over? Your pals are challengers. They haven't responded yet.
Aww. They're just busy, Pat.
Okay.
Maybe. I think you should bring in a Dizzy for that day, maybe.
Oh, man. Nice. That's a good idea. Huh? The print that he did for us is Dizzy as a gladiator in Roman times in a Colosseum.
It's awesome.
I'll dress up as Lono.
You can do a good Lono.
Do you got a Hawaiian shirt?
I can do a Lono.
That's pretty great. Okay, we need an ice cream truck, and we need...
Unfortunately, I would dress up as Branch.
Yeah.
I would dress up as Killer Croc. Wait.
Different story.
Sorry.
All right. I think on that note,
are we out?
I think that's it.
All right,
we're done.
Have a good rest of your July. Stay cool out there. It is balls hot.
It's cool off today a little bit, it's been warm.
All right. So I hope you're having a good summer, and we will talk with you sometime in August.
Suck it. I don't know. I hadn't said that in a while.
Doesn't somebody have to say we'll see you in?
In between time.
What?
In the meantime.
God damn it. All right, that's it.
We're done.
Jeez. All right. We'll be back again in August. In the meantime.
In between time.
Thank you. We'll be everywhere.
And around.
Comics.